It's 8:06 a.m. and you're listening to KBOO Portland. This is Wednesday Talk Radio. I'm your host, Lisa Leffing, and today, City of Portland union negotiations, like so many others currently around the region, are at an impasse. This morning, we are bringing back our cool pals with the District Council of Trade Unions to find out what's next. So we're live in the studio with Mike Keebaugh of Painters Local 10 and DCTU Chief Spokesperson Rob Wheaton. These two guys were negotiators for the union thing. So welcome. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This situation, I'm just saying, the Portland Public Schools teachers, we just saw what happened to the Boeing machinists. That was a heartbreaker. At Boeing, like, the machinists were in this dispute with Boeing over, you know, whether the machinists would give a lot of power back to Boeing to keep an entire generation of plane construction there in the Seattle area. And in the end, the union took a hit for their whole region. I'm saying that, okay? And now we're looking at the city of Portland. You guys have been negotiating almost a year. Almost
yes.
A year. And an impasse. What's going on? And I'm really interested in that issue of the city's use of prison labor. So what's going on? What are the issues now?
Well, the last remaining issue that we have is contracting out. It's about the privatization of jobs at the city of Portland. We have an article that it's called Article 6. It provides job protections for the employees, and the city would like to make some pretty significant changes to it.
Like what?
Well, the major change that is outstanding right now is the current contract requires that before they contract out our work, they have to demonstrate that it's going to save the city some money. As it turns out, during negotiations, it was revealed that the city can't comply with that particular restriction. They simply don't have that as part of their procurement process. They do not check to see if the contract, when they enter into a contract with a subcontractor, if it's going to save them money.
I'm sorry, you're calling out the procurement. The procurement processes when municipal government are really swampy. I'm putting that out. Procurement. Ooh. Okay. I want to hear from the Painters Union. What's happening with you guys? Where do you come in with this?
Well, I mean, we have five painters in the city of Portland, and it seems that there's a lot of paint needs within the city, and a lot of it's getting subcontracted.
We're essentially talking about maintenance of city facilities, which is kind of guarding our taxpayer investment. Go ahead.
That's true. And yeah, the painters have been kind of on the losing end of the contracting out issues. And it's a lot more expensive bringing in contractors and having them do the work. They don't have the internal knowledge that a lot of the painters do, and the communication between the trades and management is oftentimes very difficult. The managers don't have the hands-on skills and knowledge of what's going on in the community centers, and when these things get farmed out, you're dealing with higher costs. You're dealing with different products that we've tested and used that work in the fields. We just recently had last summer the painters at Parks and Rec. We maintain all the pools at the parks, and we've been painting those. I mean, since I've been there 12 years, has never been contracted out, and was just recently contracted out last summer. And they're already dealing with failures, paint failures in the pools, due to us being kind of shifted aside on the whole process.
It's an interesting issue. That this is one of those issues where I bet a lot of everyday people are just not paying attention to it at all. It's not on their radar. Probably a lot of people that are watching reality TV like every night, no offense, people probably don't see how your struggles relate to them. Can you draw a direct line between what you're doing now and how it affects taxpayers? We just talked about it a little. It's about wise use of taxpayer money. But why should people care? I just want to ring that bell. Why should everybody care about your jobs?
Well, I mean, I think in particular with this clause, this is what we're looking for, is to make sure that, if we're going to contract out these jobs, it's going to save the city some money. For example, in 2005, the city decided that it would contract out the stores facility. That's the that's where Mike, for example, goes to get his paint brushes, where he goes to pick up the paint in Parks and Recreation. They contracted this out to a vendor, actually Napa Parts, the same auto parts facility, the auto parts company. So essentially, they said we're going to put in we're going to place in charge of purchasing a vendor. What happened is that spending doubled. I mean, it went from $500,000 to over $1 million in the course of that contract pilot period.
Right, because what we're sort of talking about control. We're sort of talking about control of the process in a way. I mean, it's to me one of the things that's interesting about breaking the union, contracting out. I don't know why, and I go back to the Portland Public Schools breaking the janitors union. You know what I'm saying? And there's so many people. This was like 10 years ago. The Portland Public Schools had these janitors for all of the schools. Each school had at least one janitor, often a sub-janitor. And now I'm not talking about city unions now. I'm talking about Portland Public Schools. But I just want to look at that issue of unintended consequences, unintended spending when a municipal government breaks a union. So the Portland Public Schools, they contracted out all the janitorial stuff. They broke the union, contracted that out. And the interesting thing was that a lot of people didn't appreciate. I did a bunch of stories about it at the time. People at the schools had a real relationship with their janitor. And I know that sounds weird, but it's like the relationships people have with their jobs and the responsibility they take, that was completely broken. And all kinds of issues came up after that with the Portland Public Schools, because they brought in all new people. Actually, they brought in Portland Habilitation Center, PHC. Mm-hmm. Am I saying that right?
Yeah, that's correct.
They contracted it out to them. And relationships at every school were broken. Things didn't work right. All those people had to be brought up to speed on what the jobs were, too.
Right,
so,
right.
I mean, it's just little things that seem like you know, it's not important, but it all adds up to a big mess, well, actually. And then in the end, let me finish. In the end, the Portland Public Schools had to pay $6.5 million, I believe, in a fine, because what they did was against the law in breaking that union. So they said they were going to save money, but they spent oceans more money. And that's the part that gets me too. And I don't want to just hammer Portland schools. There's great people over there, but when we're looking at these issues of why does it matter that we have these trusted people that work in municipal government doing labor, you know, laborers that take care of the streets, the painting, the parks? These people have a relationship. You guys,
right.
It's a different thing than, and I don't want to knock Napa auto parts or whatever, but you guys have a different motivation for the job you do. You have a different connection to it. And I think you guys take a different level of pride in it. Maybe I'm wrong.
Well, yeah, that's the interesting thing about the janitors over at Portland Public Schools. Being in parks, we work fairly close. I mean, a lot of we work at Grant Pool. We maintain the pool, but we deal with a lot of the maintenance technicians over there at the school.
You have relationships that make the job more efficient.
Had I not had this job, I would have been totally unaware. I mean, when I think of a janitor, I think of a guy who just runs a mop and does all this other stuff, and I was totally wrong. You know, these people, you know, monitor the boiler systems in the school.
The boiler systems were huge, too.
And, I, you know, working around a lot of facility maintenance technicians, I mean, these boilers can be dangerous if left unmaintained and unmonitored.
Explode.
And, yeah, exactly. I mean, we're talking leveling buildings, and I had no clue about that. And, you know, and the fact that, you know, these janitors are let go under the assumption that, well, anybody can sweep a floor and
exactly.
wash a window. The management was not aware of the impact that it was going to have, and the nightmare stories you hear from these maintenance technicians, you know. I mean, a light's going off and something's leaking. I mean, one guy came in, he had relayed a story over at Woodstock Elementary School where there was diesel fuel about, you know, 3 inches deep.
Because these buildings are so old, and the janitors knew all the quirks. They knew all
they
the
do.
Weird things
they
about
do.
Where the mm-hmm. where the gum and the chewing tape, you know, the tape was holding the stuff together. We've just been joined by a new guy. This is KBOO. This is live radio. What's your name?
Rob Martinell.
Rob Martinell, and you're with Ask Me.
Yes.
Rob Martinell. What do you do, Rob?
I work for the City of Portland Water Bureau.
Water Bureau guy. Okay. Can you? So we're here talking about the District Council of Trade Unions negotiations with the City of Portland, which now the City of Portland, I believe, is who announced it was an impasse. Is that correct?
Yeah. Yeah. They sent notice at about 9 a.m.
So we've got Painters Union, we've got Water Bureau, we've got Rob Wheaton, who's just like a big brain behind the whole thing. I'm just calling you the big brain behind the whole. I'm just kidding. I'm not kidding. So did you negotiate too? Were you one of the negotiators as well?
No, I'm an officer. Yeah, okay, so 189.
There you go. Awesome. All right. So I want to backtrack a little and ask you, like, what are the tenor of the negotiations, and who exactly are you negotiating with? I mean, a lot of us, we look at the city of Portland and we divide it up into commissioners, right? That's Nick Fish's zone. That's, you know, Amanda Fritz's zone. And we have respect for some of these people, and yet sometimes we're not sure how these things slice. And since Hales came into office, we don't know who's in charge. I don't actually know who's in charge of what in a lot of cases. So as you're negotiating with the city, what piece of the city are you negotiating with? What is that department called?
Well, it's a division of Office of Management and Finance. It's the Human Resources Division. Essentially, and it's not the Human Resources Director. It's one of the Labor Relations staff members. So that is their chief spokesperson. Her name is Julia Getchell. She's a Labor Relations staff person there. And then within their bargaining team, they have various mid-level managers. We're not talking about bureau directors. We're talking about mid-level managers from various bureaus. Part of the problem has been that I've said this many times. The city has no problem getting to know. In other words, everyone seems to have the ability to veto a settlement offer, but no one seems to have the authority to come in and say, okay, this is where the deal is. We're taking this. I understand you still have some concerns, but we're going to put those on hold. We're going to take a deal. So
it's interesting. The process of doing a union negotiation, it's a little more complicated than a chess game, kind of.
More than, yeah.
Wouldn't you say? We do have a caller. Let's go to the phone lines. Of course, the number to call is 503-231-8187. Do you work for the city of Portland, or do you have a concern about labor? And I would really like to talk about how many labor unions are at an impasse right now with their negotiations in key areas of our own community. And we have Joanne. Joanne, what's going on with you today?
You know, I'm low income, and I can't break out because of all these big things that keep happening in this country. And, you know, I was listening to Democracy Now! This morning and hearing about how the FBI and the CIA were in the Vietnam War times, and knowing and seeing how worse they've gotten since then, it kills my hope for a revolution in this country, a real revolution. It kills it. And anyway, whether it's your focus or not, and it fills me full of yuck, and I'm going to die from the yuck. Goodbye.
Joanne, I'm going to cry the day that happens. I'm just putting that out. So, you know, Joanne, a lot of times we act like these issues around secret government, the FBI and the CIA are something else, like they're over there, but we're over here living our real lives. But I think that what that really goes to is, do we trust our government or not? And do we think that our government is actually being responsible with our tax money and helping us in any way? And sometimes I think that when I'm looking at these issues of right now, the Portland Public Schools Union, we don't have anyone from the Portland Schools or the Teachers Union here. But when I look at these issues of what are we spending our tax money on and what can we control that we spend our tax money on and what can we not, it is frustrating. It does make you want to lose hope. I think it does sometimes. Will's like, no, I have hope. Do you have hope, Will?
No, Rob.
Rob, sorry.
It's okay.
Wheat.
Exactly. The interesting thing about what's going on at Portland Public Schools is there's been a shift in their personnel within HR. Recently, they hired Sean Murray from the city of Portland to handle their negotiations. That's their chief spokesperson. They've hired one of their city attorneys. So the city attorneys is Stephanie Harper. They hired her from the city of Portland. They've got Yvonne Deckard, the former HR director, working as a consultant at an absorbent amount of
really
fees.
Controversial there. That's so very controversial.
I think it's no coincidence that the city of Portland with the DCTU is experiencing the same bargaining tactics as the Portland Association of Teachers through PPS.
Wow. So, what I hear you saying is that some of these actors are the same.
They are the same. I mean, it's the same tactics, same personalities. They've all come out of the same school. So it's no coincidence that both of us are having trouble right now.
Wow. And I want to call you Will Wheaton because that's the guy from Star Trek.
The famous actor.
I know. And anyway, okay, I'm going to try to stop doing that. This is Wednesday Talk Radio. We're live in Studio 2 with the District Council of Trade Unions. We're looking at the City of Portland union negotiations at an impasse, and so many others are as well. We haven't heard very much from super cool Rob Martineau. Rob, you know, and it's... Again, you know, this is the thing. We you're with the Water Bureau, right?
Correct.
We everyday people, as taxpayer people that don't know anything about City Hall or how it works at all, right? We might see trucks in the road, like fixing the sewer or something like that, or, you know, see people fixing different parts of the infrastructure, and we just take that in stride. But when we think of the Water Bureau, we're like, oh, bad Water Bureau, right? But it's a big thing, and it's not. There's a lot of people doing stuff in there, and how do I say? How do we differentiate between the leaders that we're frustrated with right now that are not being responsible with labor, not honoring labor, let's put it like that, and like who, the people in the Water Bureau that actually do the real work? Can you just talk a little bit about the Water Bureau so that we can understand a little bit more? Like, how many people work there, and what do you guys all do?
Well, I lead a crew that does maintenance and construction. We install water services. We repair main breaks. When there's a new development, we may be installing fire services to buildings. We maintain the hydrants. We replace hydrants that are too old to be repaired. We work all over the city and as far as Bull Run and supply water to most of the region. What we do is we provide immediate response when there are emergencies. We do have an aging system, and we work with that system every day. We know where the valves are. We know where all of the moving parts and pieces are that keep this system working. We also are certified by DHS, the state of Oregon, in drinking water, and that's something that we take very seriously. The people that I work with take very seriously the work we do in maintaining public health, and that's really what it's about with water. And a big part of what we're talking about in these negotiations is taking away our ability to do that work, protecting our right to do that work, and not sending that work out to someone who may not have the response time we do. There was a very large main break on 4th and Burnside. I don't think that's a secret. That was a very, very large break.
When was that?
That was... I don't remember the exact date. It's been a couple of months now. But it had that intersection shut down for several days in order to make those repairs. That was something that we had a response time of less than an hour to shut down a very large water main, one of the larger mains that flows through Portland. That immediate response is something you cannot get with a contract. It is somebody who's immediately there to pick up the phone and knows where the valves are to be able to start mitigating the damage. And that affects ratepayers. That saves ratepayers money.
I really want to encourage people to call. We're here talking about the District Council of Trade Unions, Portland area. We're looking at these issues of labor, what's going on with the labor movement right now, and why do our political leaders seem so interested in destroying those unions? I'm putting that out. And the school district as well, and we don't have anyone here representing the school teachers or the district. You know, the hard thing about getting teachers on the air is that they're at work right now. Just saying. So anyway, it's a complicated thing. I try to get people, teachers in during the break, but then they want to be with their family. It's hard. When you look at the work that people do, I mean, we're talking about working people, and we're not talking about like what we might consider to be creative professionals or anything. I don't mean to be rude, but it's people like you guys that actually make the city work, Portland, the city that works. So 503-231-8187 is the number to call. Are you in a union? What are you going through? What are you seeing? Maybe you used to be in a union. Maybe you wish you were. I would really love to hear from you right now, because we're looking at a busted economy, right? We're looking at nationally an economy where most of the jobs that are growing are service industry jobs, okay? We see these gigantic barrier blocks of apartment complexes going up with street level retail. But the people that are paying that $1,500 a month rent now for a new studio apartment, where are they going to work? Okay, I'm just asking these rhetorical questions. 503-231-8187. And so I want to go back to this issue of the inmate labor. Okay, what are the, and by the way, if you're incarcerated right now, we love you. I just want to put that out. Cable Community Radio supports people who are behind bars, and we actually have a show about that. But I do want to talk about what the city's doing. with bringing in people that are county jail inmates to do certain kinds of jobs. There's a concern there. So can you talk about that, Rob?
Actually, no.
I'm sorry.
This is a grievance that was filed out of LIUNA.
LIUNA is one of the other unions.
Yeah, it's a trade grievance. It's one of their grievances there, and we represent the corrections officers as well through a different local at AFSCME where I work. I'm the chief DCT spokesperson, but I work for AFSCME. So there's a little bit of a conflict there that I've kind of kept away from that entire issue. So
I hear you.
I'm really not in touch with that grievance particular. So
that's why I'm saying that union negotiations are a little more complicated than a chess game. They are. I don't mean to be weird.
Well,
and there's laws around it as well.
Well, one of the things I had problems with the prison labor was, I've seen them out there doing painting work in parks, and the problem I have is that a lot of the managers aren't really, that request this prison labor, aren't really in tune with the safety needs that are needed for the workers to do the work. I mean, I wasn't aware of any kind of testing done on the paint to see if it was lead-based paint or any protections like that. And it concerns me personally that you're sending out prisoners out there without the proper tools, the proper equipment.
The safety of the actual guys doing the work.
Exactly. And it's just, and also the safety of the public in the sense that, if it were lead-based paint, what mitigation are you using to make sure that it's done properly? Because this was a fence around a playground. And, so what are you doing to manage that kind of stuff?
And does nobody have to answer that question?
Well, it's difficult getting them to answer the questions.
Who do we ask that question?
This incident that I'm speaking of was done years ago before I got active in what was going on. It took me a while to get as active in the union as I had because I got so fed up with what was going on. I came from the private sector. And this was my first opportunity to be in the union, and you start asking these questions and you start getting the pushback from management. Just keep your mouth shut. Mm-hmm. I am no foreigner to going down to HR and sitting in their disciplinary room.
He's been spanked.
And over the years, I say, I'm just fed up, and the union is the only thing that's backing me. Now, I paid my dues, and I walked through the walk, and I paid my dues because that's, it was a union shop, and then I really realized that these are the only people that are really defending, the truth.
And it's interesting to see how many institutions are arrayed against just labor. And the other thing is, too, and I want to just say this, all over the city, my name is Lisa Loving. I'm a professional journalist. I've been covering the city of Portland for many years. I know wonderful people in every bureau. Just want to put that out. I'm not the queen of demonizing an entire sector. And I'm just interested in the ways that the best ideas and some of the most interesting people can or cannot rise to the top. Or how do we get the best value over what the leadership in the city of Portland does, right? And we have a whole slate of callers. This is Wednesday Talk Radio. We're live in the studio with the District Council of Trade Unions. And let's go to the phone lines. Paul is a teacher. Paul, what's going on with you guys?
Well, I teach at Clark Community College, but I work for SEIU, so I was an actual union organizer in Seattle, unionizing or trying to get adjunct faculty, part-time faculty, those who don't have benefits at will, in the state of Washington, organized to join the Service Employees International Union. And so the big thing now is for teachers to look at themselves as working class. So I'm teaching at Clark College. There's over 600 part-time, non-tenure track teachers there. 60% of the teachers at Clark Community College come from Portland. So the issue is we are trying to bridge between the academic world with our fellow brothers and sisters in, janitorial services, those people that help, the colleges go forward. The second problem I see is more and more labor studies organizations and departments across the country are shuttering up. So we as college teachers don't have the tools to teach our young people who come to our classrooms with a huge deficit through their PK-12 education. They don't have a history of labor in this country. They have no idea why a 32-hour work week is important, who created the 40-hour work week, all the struggles that we did throughout history as unionists to bring this society somewhat closer to equity. Right now, students think that they have to work 60, 70, 80 hours a week.
And that's normal.
They think that they have no rights. They don't understand the power of collective bargaining because they've been taught for 20 years it's all about a test, it's all about the man or the woman running the corporation, and just shut up, do your job, and accept. The third thing is, in academia, we have too many old people that are going beyond 65, and there's a movement in this country to start giving up some of your hours. So young people, we can grow the profession of education, because right now in education, K-12 and college is a huge movement that the unions have not addressed, and that is the cyber schooling, getting rid of teachers and putting iPads and distance learning into the classroom. So I think that's an end around that administrators and these private software, Jeff Bezos, Bill Gates, Melinda, Pearson, Bloomberg, all those folks have gotten the ear of administrators, and faculty look like deer caught in Hummer headlights. And it's really tough being a part-time faculty in Washington to try to speak up, because we can be fired just by not being rehired with a blink of the eye. Right. And so it's a really big problem. And I'm driving to my class to teach Running Start students that they have the power to stop this. But if I'm the only teacher in many cases that has the guts to put his or her neck on the line, it does seem like I'm an outlier and a lone wolf. And it's really this basic formula. There is power in numbers. Only 40 part-time teachers at Clark Community College are in the union, and there's 600 of us.
Dang. Okay, Paul. Awesome, Paul. I got to cut you loose because we got a full slate of callers, but you're not alone. We're with you, Paul. And Paul's reminding me that Portland State faculty also had a big, ugly union thing, and I'm not sure where they're at with it either. I know that late last year they were also at an impasse. All this is happening while our daily newspaper becomes not a daily. So if you pick, I don't mean to slam Oregon Live, but if you look through it, it's mostly news briefs now, collected news briefs. And so so we have less access to even reporting on these situations. Portland State faculty, though, the super awesome Portland Mercury did do some coverage of that late last year. Were you going to say something?
Yeah, I mean, just about the Oregonian. Yesterday, you'll notice on the front page, there was an article about the parking enforcement and the parking rangers and the parking meters up at Washington Park. I mean, this is such a low priority. I mean, it's an important issue for those members out at that local, but the big story that was buried within the metro section is that the city declared an impasse, and we're moving closer to a strike at the city of Portland. And what does the Oregonian put on the front page? The dispute between the parking enforcement officers and the parking rangers. I mean, it was appalling to me. I mean, that's the covers that we got.
And I have to say that I'm a juggler's wife, okay? And we have this thing, it's called an unstable platform. And so you take a board and you put it on like a tube, and then you get on there and juggle, and then you go back and forth like a seesaw, and that's what it looks like to me, okay? Clowns. So we have more callers. Did you want to say something?
Sure.
I'm just pointing out people in the studio now.
Rob Marneau. I think sometimes what gets lost with the members of the DCTU is the breadth of the work that we do.
Yeah.
It's across the city and beyond. There's many, many bureaus that we represent. We're talking 1,600 people that come to work every day to make the city better. In the parks, you know, these are the people that really make Portland livable. We're known across the country for the livability of our parks. Somebody builds that bench. A carpenter builds those benches. Somebody repairs that playground equipment. Somebody mows the lawn, keeps the weeds out. These are the things that just parks do. Just in public safety, we also represent 911 operators. When sworn officers call, they don't call other sworn officers. Those are members of AFSCME. Those are members of this DCTU, the forensic ID techs, the people that identify the people that come into the jail.
These are the jobs that our kids should be aspiring to. These are the careers that our kids should be aspiring to. And we are seeing these constant conservative attacks saying, oh, government jobs, we need to suffocate government in the bathtub. And we're shooting ourselves in the foot.
We have a huge role in public safety. Even the training division. The training division has our members in the Portland Police. Transportation, part of another thing that makes Portland very livable. We know about bike paths, we know about bike lanes and sidewalks and these street improvements and green streets and bioswales. We have the ability to do that work, and it's been solely taken from us. We employ the people that build those sidewalks and make those repairs that are capable of doing the large-scale projects, but they're being contracted out. Our surveyors, they make sure they go where they need to go. They're the ones that provide that construction staking.
I have to jump in here and say, when you're talking about the city contracting out to Napa, right? You're literally talking about turning family wage jobs into service jobs. Mm-hmm. Am I imagining that? Am I hallucinating?
No.
Oh, my God.
Absolutely
okay.
Correct.
We have a full slate of callers. Let's go back to the phone line. Chris is on the line. Chris, what's going on?
Hey, so I'm actually supposed to be going into professional development right now, but I wanted to make sure I called in to, you know,
represent.
First of all, say that Portland public teachers stand in solidarity with all other unions who are in this struggle against privatization, against workers' rights, against, you know, working conditions that benefit everybody. And, you know, I'm a first-year teacher, so I have to be kind of careful around, you know, some of these issues because, you know, I'm kind of in the same position as Paul in that you know, they can let me go because I didn't wear the right shirt. But you know, these issues are really important, and it's looking like, you know, with Portland, it may very well be that at tonight's board meeting that Portland Public imposes a contract. So I want to ask all of those who can make it to show up at tonight's board meeting at 7 p.m. at the Blanchard Education Service Center downtown at 501 North Dixon and show some solidarity for teachers and for students. And also, you asked about an update with PSU, and I just got something as an alumni about their bargaining session that took place last week, and it said that they spent 16 hours in faculty contract mediation for, and this is the AAUP, which is, I can't remember what that stands for, Association of University Professors. They spent 16 hours in negotiations, and basically the administration bargaining team was, you know, focus on these red herrings and wouldn't negotiate on the real issues that they were trying to get. So, you know, it sounds like just about every other bargaining session that's been going on in this city.
And, seriously, 21 hours with the schools, the Portland Public Schools, too.
Yeah,
and we're trying to understand, like, what is it that the administration is trying to get out of this and how they think that, you know, after we just had the bond measure passed, and, you know, which represents a huge show of support on the part of the community to save teachers, how they think that this is a good hand to play to try to force us into this strike and try to force us to, you know, to have to put our foot down on this. And, you know, but I don't want to get off on the PPS thing. I just wanted to call and say I appreciate what you guys do for the city. I know that you guys keep everything running, and we're with you. We stand with you in solidarity and keep up the good fight.
Thanks, Chris, and Happy New Year.
Well, Chris, I had a quick question for you. I mean, I received an email at 10:44 last night saying that board meeting tonight was canceled and that they were deferring us to a rally on the 13th.
Ooh,
so
yeah, okay.
At 5:30. So this is at 10:44 p.m.
I will quickly look this up.
So let us. Okay. I want to make sure that we're getting out good information to folks, because if there's a rally tonight, I definitely want to be there.
Absolutely, and I agree. So I'm gonna have to do my homework on that because I didn't see that email. So
no problem. These things happen so fast.
I know.
Yes,
Chris,
they do.
Thank you so much for calling. Always thank you for calling.
Thank you.
And this is Wednesday Talk Radio. We're live in Studio 2 with members of the District Council of Trade Unions. We're talking about the city impasse. The city declared an impasse, actually, for the union negotiations that they've been having with workers across the board. Let's go back to the phone lines. We have Guy on the phone. Guy, what's going on with you?
Well, I just wanted to come in this morning and kind of look at something a little bit further ahead that's coming. People should be aware of this Public Employee Choice Act that's going to be probably on the ballots next fall that is targeting the public union, trying to stop SEIU and the teachers' union from being able to levy fair share dues from people who are not.
Oh, right.
And which is a huge gutting of the union's ability to organize and to. And I think that what the conservative factions are really trying to do is to gun at the political action committees that are so powerful, especially in the teacher unions.
If they're so powerful, how come so many people can't read? I'm sorry, but go ahead.
Right. I mean, as far as the PAC, the NEA PAC or the OEA PAC is just, it's something that the conservative elements in the state fears, or they are definitely at odds with. And I think that this is a tool by which, I mean, even though it's not necessarily it's not a full right to work ballot initiative, but it's definitely a foot in the door. So,
and now we're talking about initiative petition 9.
Yes, yes, that's exactly.
And that's
right.
One of those, what conservatives call the so-called right to work things. So,
anti-worker.
There you go.
That's
so,
anti-worker.
Thank you for calling because that was not on my radar, but I remember now that you brought it up. Did you?
I think it's a big issue.
It's a huge issue. So, who's behind it? Do you know? In Oregon.
I thought it was a Bill Sizemore thing. I'm not sure. Okay. I know that it was presented by a law firm in Lake Oswego, but I think it might be a Cascade Policy Institute thing. I don't know.
All right. Well, thanks a lot for calling. And
sure.
We are going to. I have to say, coming up this morning on KBOO at 9 on Political Perspectives, 50th anniversary of the War on Poverty, and Jay Thiemeyer is going to be here speaking with journalist Sasha Abramsky about his latest book, The American Way of Poverty, How the Other Half Still Lives. At 10, it's Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. At 10:15, Flashpoints features an interview with a lawyer for the family of Andy Lopez about a new expanded civil rights complaint against a Sonoma County deputy sheriff for killing the Latino teen. And the Electronic Intifada, Wild, reports on the release of a Palestinian hunger striker after 17 months in prison. If you're on Twitter and you're interested in those issues, you should follow the Electronic Intifada. You're going to learn so much about what's going on that you're not going to read in the daily newspaper if you live someplace where there is a daily newspaper. At 11 on the Dirtbag, host Glenn Andreessen welcomes back Columbia County OSU Extension Service agricultural agent Chip Bubble to talk veggies and what to do. Bubble to talk veggies and what to do about cold damaged plants. And we really also always want to thank people for being members of KBOO. So we have a couple of callers. Let's go back to those phone lines. Let's talk to Gary. Gary, what's going on with you?
Greetings, all.
Greetings.
Hello.
Yes. I feel this is a politically sinister plot against the unions. I watch cable access. So I watch the city council. And the first thing that our mayor did was announce there was a $25 million budget deficit, and we watched how all the agencies groveled to the city council asking not to cut their budgets. Then we find out that they cut way, way too much, and now they have over $12 million. Extra in
surplus,
and they just put it, and now they can spend it any way they see. And it was a way to attack the union, saying that, hey, we don't have the money, when they actually do.
All right. Well, thanks for calling, Gary. I'm always interested in that situation. I kind of remember when Vera Katz did similar. She didn't really do the similar thing. She asked people to project what their cuts would be, and then she looked at the numbers. Actually, Vera Katz was, she was a pretty good steward of city resources. But you wanted to respond.
Yeah, this actually happens often. This is what they call it, the fall bump. I mean, that's the term that the city uses when they come up with extra money in the fall after all the collective bargaining agreements are settled. It happens on a regular basis. The interesting thing here in this particular scenario is this dispute with the city is not about economics. We're on the same page economically. When we cost out our proposals, I think that we'll see that either the union's proposal is cheaper or at the same cost as the city's. This is all about language and job protections. That's what the issue is here. There's no dispute over wages, no dispute over benefits. It's all about job protections, which is pretty unique.
Wow. All right. And let's go back to the phone line. We have Dan on the phone. Dan, what are you thinking about today?
I'm a retired Portland Parks and Rec employee. I was the maintenance plumber there. And I was with Ron Wyden and Mike Murphy, and we did the investigation on the Napa situation and the abuse and overpayment that was being done by the city.
Whoa there, Dan. What do you mean overpayment to Napa? I never heard that. Can you talk about what happened there?
Well, I'm not criticizing now the employees of Napa or anything. They were wonderful people, and they tried to do their job.
They're not in charge.
But a lot of times we were being paid extra than what we could have gone and purchased ourselves. And we had the proof and everything. I know Ron Wheaton, myself, and like I said, Mike Murphy, we spent a lot of hours going through their billing process and what they did. And we found a big hole in their figures, let's say.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, Dan, it's good to hear from you. It's been a long time.
Yeah, Dan, how you doing?
How you doing, Dan?
You guys talk about this. So how long has this been going on? I never read about this before.
Oh, I know.
That contract was ended. I mean, that contract was terminated. Essentially, when the city council brought it up for renewal, it was a pilot program. It started off with one of the commissioners, who I won't name, said, well, this program has saved us $250,000. And essentially, the way they calculated their savings was off of the total. For example, if you go to Safeway, right, and you shouldn't shop at Safeway. It's an anti-union store. But nevertheless, it's the one that I'm thinking of. If you go to the grocery store and you run the total, hand them your little membership card, and they calculate the discount, they said, hey, today you saved $20. Well, actually, no, you spent $200, right? You spent $200. But that's how they calculate. They calculate it off of a percent of total spending. So in order to achieve that $250,000, they had to double the spending. They had to double it.
Yeah.
So when was this?
This was
2005.
Wow. Yeah. I was.
So when you say you don't want to name the city commissioner that said that, am I assuming that's someone that's still on the council?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
So do the math.
Yeah, I was there, and that was in my less active union days. But this was kind of an awareness of how the city operates. I mean, when they rolled this thing out, you know, you hear rumors and murmurs that this might happen. It's like, well, this is a big change. You don't think it's going to happen. But, you know, you watch it go along, and then they come and talk to you and tell you how it's going to affect you and your work. And, you know, and I looked at the construct of what they were doing. They had two 483 employees there in stores, and they are the ones that monitor. And when they purchase something and they put it on the shelf, it's owned by the city of Portland. And then we come in and we purchase from them, and we get the tools, and then they bill it to our shop. Okay. When they came in and they said, well, Napa's going to take over, but we don't know whether we're going to own the product or they're going to own the product. And so we're up in the air on that. Well, it turned out.
What do you mean the product?
Meaning when, you know, if what is owned in stores, were they going to sell them the product, or were they going to have the city own the product? And I thought it was kind of weird, because when you're looking at a corporation, their markup is like 10%. So what happened is that when these people running Napa purchased the product and put it into stores, it was owned by the city of Portland. So that material didn't even need to be used to get them their profits, which I thought was odd, because if you're running low You know, I mean, every corporation has targets and goals and sales and all this other stuff that if you could run short, then I'm $10,000 short, so I'm going to buy 10,000 printer cartridges and just put them on the shelf and hope that somebody purchases them. Does that make sense?
I'm freaking out.
Well, okay.
I'm freaking out now.
It was bizarre because...
Are these people still in charge?
No, I think we just talked about that.
Well, this is what got me involved because I'm thinking to myself, well, I'm a store manager, you know, and I'm running short 1 month of my targeted goals. I'm just going to shift a bunch of stuff. So one of the things that happened is there was a lot of surplus stuff on the shelves when NAPA left that the city ended up owning
because excess inventory.
And the thing that I kept running into is I'd order a tool, I say, hey, I want a wrench or something like that, and it's like, no, this is not the right wrench. They get me the right wrench and they put the wrench on the shelf as opposed to sending it back to the place that they ordered it from and getting the refund. So there was just all this inventory. There was no motivation for the profit company to take the materials back. They just shelved it, and it was just it was insane. That was
you
just,
know what, and then you just said that motivation, right? And that's the thing that strikes me. Some of these for everyday people that are just living our lives and we don't really think about who's fixing the water main on Burnside at 4th, we might get irritated because we can't get past it or whatever. We don't sit around and think about these relationships and the relationships that actually make things work. And it's so easy to watch Fox News and just start demonizing government, period, and the discussion. You know, it's easy to get angry at City Hall and think of it as one big thing, but it isn't one big thing. It's about, I don't know, 15,000 little things, right? People doing this, people taking pride in what they do. And, you know, anyway, so we do have another caller. Let's go back to the phone.
Can I say one more thing?
Oh, yeah. Yes, of course, Dan.
I'd like to add that when we go out and the city hires these contractors, now, I was the maintenance plumber, so I can give you an example. They go out and they put this playground equipment in these parks and they do a good job and they put in a drinking fountain. The very next day when they're done and gone, I have to go back and redo it because it was put in or installed incorrectly. We have the same problems in our community centers and other projects. The city hires these contractors. When they're done, our maintenance crews, our FMTs, our painters, they have to go back and go over and do the repairs correctly and use the right equipment. This goes on day after day in the city.
Wow, Dan.
And they all the time, when they ask a city employee in parks, especially, hey, do you have any ideas how you can save money? Mike there, for one, excuse me, the painter, has been excellent on coming up with great ideas on how to save money. And they just sit there and they all shake their head, yeah. And that's the end of it. It doesn't go any farther. Same thing continues on and on. The wasteful money, getting contractors that then does not do the job, and then the parks people or the water bureau and it might be the electricians, they have to go back and make it right. So,
Dan,
thank you for your time.
Wait, Dan, can you leave your contact information with the Magical Engineering Pixie? I would love to talk to you more about this, if that's okay.
Okay. Well, the other one, too, I might add is on the 99%er when they had the two parks downtown.
Yeah.
And they blamed the 99%ers for wrecking them bathrooms. I talked to you about this before, way back when. Ooh. That was a complete lie. They didn't destroy those bathrooms.
Please leave your contact information. I really want to talk to you more. And I thank you so much for calling, and Happy New Year.
Okay, thanks,
Dan.
Thanks,
all right.
Dan.
All right, Mike. Bye.
These are getting to be deep conceptual waters. This is Wednesday Talk Radio. We're live in the studio with the District Council of Trade Unions. We're talking about what has happened when the City of Portland yesterday morning declared an impasse with their negotiations for these unions. And we're talking about, it's a coalition, and we're just talking about all these different people, workers that do all kinds of jobs all over the city. And it's the kind of jobs that you take for granted. You don't think that much. In fact, I'm sure there's jobs that people don't even know exist, right? And
sure.
And, this is true.
Yeah. Let me bring up another one.
Rob,
when you see the sides of the trucks that are out doing the work, and it says 823-4000. That is information and referral. That is where you can call and get numbers for virtually any city and I believe county employee. And information and referral will direct you to that. You can call and you need a name if you need to get a hold of a certain bureau. If you need to get a hold of a commissioner, and please, everybody within the sound of my voice, call your commissioner, call the mayor, tell them the DCTU deserves a deal. We are protecting the resources, we are protecting services, and we deserve the right to do our jobs. So call your commissioners. Information and referral can do that. And that number is 503-823-4000. Those are our members serving this community.
All right. And we do have another caller. We're starting to run out of show, but let's go to that last caller. It's another Dan. Dan, we're really big Dan fans today. What you got?
Yeah, I wanted to bring up Portland and Vancouver's waterfront and the grain handlers contract. And
Good one. Keep going.
Yeah, I wanted everybody, all your listeners, to be aware that our contract, the contract dispute, has nothing to do with wages. Once again, it's all about collective bargaining and them trying to take that away from the longshoremen.
All right, Dan, what is your union again? Tell us.
ILWU.
So what can we do to support what you're doing over there?
If you guys could just show up to the picket lines at Portland and Vancouver, that everybody there would really appreciate it. And you just need to be aware that they've hired armed guards that will have tased and maced everybody there. So it is it's something that's not getting very much media attention, but it needs to be known.
Dan, I really, really appreciate your calling. Can you also leave your contact information with the Magical Engineering Pixie? Because I think that we should probably bring you guys on the air special. Thank you so much for calling.
Thank you.
All right. You know, my dad was an air traffic controller in 1982. And that was the year that Ronald Reagan fired all the air traffic controllers. And it had an impact on thousands of families, probably tens of thousands of families. And it never ceases to amaze me, the people who have the power to do whatever they have the power to do, they snap their fingers and they just destroy lives. And I need someone to look at that. So we're here with the District Council of Trade Unions. Do you guys, I wish we could go around, we've got a few minutes left, and talk about, like, what do you think is the most important thing for people to know? And what's the most important thing for people to do right now to support labor and support labor in the city of Portland, Portland State University, Portland teachers, the ILWU on the waterfront? What should people be doing? Let's start with you.
Well, I think the first thing that people need to be aware of is that, you know, I mean, we care about our work just like anybody else in the private sector would care about their work. I mean, we know what's best. We're the ones out there knowing what to do, how to do it, what tools we need. And, you know, I think the most important thing that the public could do to help us is just to call the commissioners, to send emails, let them know that, you know, that they're behind us. And, you know, I've seen just especially in this last year how the public really does have an input and an impact on City Hall.
Right on. Here, let's go to Rob. I haven't let you talk enough. What do you think is the most important thing? What's the most important thing for people to know? And what's the most important thing for people to do right now? And you got 1 minute.
Well, I want people to understand that behind the scenes, the things that people often don't see are that it's not just police and fire that are in public safety. The clean water, the bureau I work in, we help to bring that clean water to the residents of this community. On the other side, my counterparts make sure that dirty water, once it's used, goes away. If you think about how critical that is, that clean water gets here clean, and when it's dirty, it goes away, and that those two never cross, that is absolutely critical to public health and safety. There are so many areas of the world that do not have clean, safe drinking water. Mm-hmm. We are blessed to have that, as well as a system to have it leave our homes, and we don't have to carry either of them in buckets.
All right. I still want to call you Will Wheaton. I'm going to stop.
It's
Rob.
Okay.
Rob Wheaton. What should people be doing now?
Please call the city commissioners. Call the Portland Public School District. Call, you email the board over at PSU. Whenever there's a labor dispute, get in touch with the people in charge and encourage them to settle the contract with their employees.
Really quickly, do you have a great big fabulous ally that we should be hugging? Is that a weird question? Mm-hmm. Is there somebody that's doing great on this that we should call and say, you're doing great?
We'd love to say our commissioners are.
All right. Yeah. Okay. All right. That's it for our show. Thanks to our guest, Mike Keebaugh of Painters Local 10, DCTU Chief Spokesperson Rob Wheaton, and Rob Martineau, Water Bureau. Special thanks to engineer Steve Nasser and Sky the Studio Dog. This show will be podcast on KBOO.FM by the end of the day. Grab that link and share it with your friends and family. I'm Lisa Loving. Follow me on Twitter for more news and information about the topics we discuss on this show. Find out more about the DCTU at dctu.org. Theme music by the March 4th Marching Band. Thanks for listening and stay tuned for Political Perspectives.
Good morning. You're tuned to KBOO Portland. Coming up this morning on KBOO right now, we're going to get to political perspectives. On the 50th anniversary of the War on Poverty, host Jay Thiemeyer speaks with journalist Sasha Abramski about his latest book, The American Way of Poverty, How the Other Half Still Lives. At 10 o'clock, hear Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. And then at 10:15, Flashpoints features an interview with a lawyer for the family of Andy Lopez about a new expanded federal civil rights complaint against a Sonoma County deputy sheriff for the killing of the Latino teen. And the Electronic Intifada reports on the release of a Palestinian hunger striker after 17 months in prison. At 11 on The Dirtbag, host Glenn Andreessen welcomes back Columbia County OSU Extension Service agricultural agent Chip Bubel to talk veggies and what to do about cold-damaged plants. Also, Chip will talk about the importance of having the right amount of nitrogen in the soil and when. And thanks, KBOO members, for supporting community radio here in Portland. You're not a member? You can go to kboo.fm and click on Donate Today to join up and be a member and supporter of KBOO. Thanks for doing that. We're going to hear a couple of announcements, and then we'll get right to that interview with Sasha Abramski about the American way of poverty, how the other half still lives. Thanks for tuning into KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio and the North Portland Neighborhood Library is proud to sponsor the Jefferson High School 13th Annual Multicultural Film Festival. On January 14th, the documentary The House I Live In explores the risks that prohibition poses to freedom and the tragedy of addicts being treated as criminals. Meanwhile, the prisons of America are growing overcrowded with nonviolent criminals and illegal drugs are still being sold in schoolyards. This film is being shown on January 14th at the North Portland Neighborhood Library off of Killingsworth Street at 6 p.m. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
My first time ever on the radio was on KBOO about 10 years ago on the Soundbox with Dina B. And I've been doing radio ever since. I love KBOO.
KBOO is such a friendly, laid-back, fun environment. There's a lot of freedom here.
Boy, all I can say is that they just give me the complete freedom to play every single thing I feel like playing, and that's a rare thing in radio stations nowadays, and I sure appreciate it.
It's a passion of mine to investigate and to find and to share.
Come on down to the next volunteer orientation on Wednesday, January 8th from 7 to 9 p.m. here at the KBOO Studios at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue.
This is Jay Thiemeyer for KBOO FM in Portland, Oregon. I'm talking with Sasha Abramski about his latest book, The American Way of Poverty, How the Other Half Still Lives. Welcome to KBOO.
Thank you for having me on.
How did the book come about?
Well, I've been doing an awful lot of reporting all the way back to the early years of the century, and I've been going all over the country, driving, flying, going to these out-of-the-way communities and talking to people about their everyday lives and about the ways in which they were making ends meet or not making ends meet.